everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. Busy agenda for this afternoon. First up, we have the Orinoco Wastewater Treatment Agreement. I think Richard and or the mayor of Orinoco were going to lead us through this.
Your Honor, I'll open it up, and then I think Wendy's going to take us through
the right.
Presentation here. But I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. As you recall, you had a previous presentation on this back in January at a committee of the whole meeting. And since that time, there's been some development, and we've been working collaboratively with Orinoco to talk through this issue, to reconcile some of the feedback you provided at that time. And as you know, there is a legislative request associated with this that's being discussed as part of the capital improvement or the bonding bill this year. And we were encouraged to work with Orinoco to develop the options, to see what a partnership with Rochester might look like, and just some strong encouragement on being a good regional partner was provided there. And so I know Richard and Wendy and the consulting team and the mayor for Orinoco have all been working really hard on presenting this as an option. I think the goal is to get some indication from the council on whether the general terms of the agreement are acceptable, and then Orinoco will continue to do the same thing at their community level. And so.
Mr. Hickey.
So before we get too much into the details of it, I mean, are we going to make the business case up front and then kind of decide whether we want to even proceed?
Yeah, I think as part of the presentation that Wendy and Richard will, they'll address some of that. And I think ultimately, as we looked at this, we want to ensure that, one, we have capacity, and two, that from a financial perspective, we're held whole and not subject to any liability that way. But
so I think
from a business case perspective, I don't think we'll be presented it from a business case perspective. Orinoco will be looking at it that way, because they have really two options. They can either build their own treatment plants and treat their own waste and work through that process, or they can look at connecting to us. And that's, the legislature has instructed them to look at regional treatment, which they did. We are here today not to talk about regional treatment, but about them connecting to us and working out a lot of the details associated with that. Ultimately, the city of Orinoco will decide what it is they want to do. But these are the terms under which we would suggest you, these are the terms we would suggest you consider if you were to enter into a treatment agreement with them. So there's really no business case. We're going to talk about the advantages and disadvantages, but there's no business case that the city has conducted regarding this. The cost will be paid for in its entirety by Orinoco.
And I think the impetus for the conversation was a strong reinforcement. There's going to be a solution to the wastewater treatment situation in Orinoco. They're currently having to reconcile some things with the MPCA. From a legislative perspective, they're going to receive funding to build their own facility or to connect to Rochester's facility. And so, as you look at that from a land use perspective, I mean, that was one of the perspectives that we, took into consideration, moving forward. I know there's that idea of, is it competitive from a regional perspective, or the competitiveness issues that, are in play here. But realistically, this situation is going to advance. The question is, does it make more sense to do it on a standalone basis or connecting into our facility?
I wanted to ask you on the, when you said that the project was paid for by the people of Orinoco, that's my understanding. Was there a big state grant that was going to be paying for a lot of it?
The cost to treat the waste will be paid for by someone other than City of Rochester residents.
Okay.
So it's either going to be Orinoco residents or the state of Minnesota, but it's not going to, there'd be no financial burden falling on the city of Rochester and its wastewater utility customers.
But this whole project would require a substantial subsidy from the state, right?
I believe that's the whole premise part of the city of Orinoco, yes.
Okay.
Wendy, do you want to just go through some of the
specifics? Sure. I thought what I would do is just kind of walk through three areas. Kind of what are we limiting? What are the requirements we're giving to Orinoco in this agreement? This is a draft agreement. We've been working on it, and I think the main concepts are in there. It might not be completely done yet. What are the costs to Orinoco, and then what are the benefits to the city? What benefits does the city of Rochester get from this? So in terms of limitation, the big one is they're limited to 0.4 million gallons per day. And so what that means to Rochester is that's 2% of the wastewater plant's design flow. And the wastewater plant's issues, are there sort of limiting factors, are really not flow. They are based on their loading, so their organic loading and phosphorus. Those are the two big factors. When we're going to have to do anything out there, it's going to be because of those things, not because of flow. And then the other thing is it's old. You know, it was built back when I worked there in the early 80s, and it unfortunately, there's things that are going to have to be replaced. Again, none of that is going to be affected by flow. So flow is not our current limiting issue. So that's one thing. Then the other thing is that they're going to be limited by the what we call the phase one and phase two, and so that's the two different yellow colors. So 1A and one, or just, I'm sorry, 1A and 1-2 and 1B, and so they can't do anything. They can do whatever they want. Well, not whatever. There's already homes there. They can, you know, add those homes in without anything additional to be done. But then in the green, which is 1C. If they want to add any additional, that would be basically some annexation on their part. They need to have some things in place. They need to have a comp plan, and they need to have zoning ordinances. They also, before they can do any of this, they would have to have, we're requiring in this, a wastewater ordinance similar to ours, which would include, they have to follow our fog ordinance, all of those kinds of factors. So, you know, basically, we don't want to get, we only want waste that's the same as domestic homeowners. They also are going to be required to have two sites. They're going to have a monitoring and a flow monitoring and a wastewater site and a pretreatment site within their city, and then they're going to have one prior to where they discharge into the city of Rochester, which they'll build, but it will own it. So if we need to pretreat, if there are happens to be problems, so we can monitor it, and any expenses that we incur if we have to pretreat or even for monitoring will be, or no gold will be expected to be. So those are sort of the limitations we're putting around based on this agreement. The costs, really, there's the kind of wastewater infrastructure cost. The PIF fee would be the same as what citizens of Rochester would pay. The sewer availability fee would be the same as what the citizens of Rochester would pay. Then there's sort of this monthly fee, which is the fixed rate. And that would be, there'd be a certain dollar amount, and then there'd be a flow amount. So they would be having one flow because we'd be billing them based on that flow, and then we'd also bill them based on the number of homes. Now we would follow, what we're proposing is that we would follow what we did in the Chester Heights agreement, and that would be to reduce their per home amount by, you know, whatever, it's like $2.30, what it costs us to bill them based on kind of if they what we pay RPU to do the billing right now. For each individual home. So there's that, then again, flow based, and then the big change or that we're proposing is that it's called the capital equalization charge, and that currently what is listed is if we're adding somebody outside the city limits, it's 150% or 1.5 of the current rate. So their monthly rate would be 150% or 1.5. I think that's great. I'm glad we have that because you can't get kind of growth outside the city in not organized fashion. The problem with that is it says in there that you can be at 100% if you have an orderly annexation. And that is what Chester Heights did. They have an orderly annexation in place. Incorporated community is just not going to do this. So what we thought, this would require a change in the ordinance, but for an existing incorporated community, which there aren't many, you know, this is going to be pretty unique. We would change that number to 110%. So that's what we're proposing, probably the biggest change from what we currently have in our rates. Now, in terms of benefits, in terms of direct benefits to Rochester, again, we'd be getting 10% extra, you know, based on what everybody else pays. And then the other one is we know we're negotiating our permit with MPCA right now, and we know we're going to get a phosphorus limit. And it's all based on kind of how much, you know, you can put in Lake Zumbro. We have a pie, and we get a piece of that pie. Well, we had a meeting with MPCA last week to talk about our piece of that pie, and they, you know, made it pretty clear that Orinoco gets a piece of that pie, too. So it means that our piece becomes smaller. So we take in Orinoco, likely, and we have to negotiate this, we would get that piece of their pie, and our piece would be. So we do get some more allocation for phosphorus, which every little bit's going to help us because we're going to be right at the brink of being able to meet that phosphorus number without having, we're going to have expense somewhere, but it might not be, have to be exorbitant. The other thing, just sort of higher level is, you know, I've been out there, and you know, I've worked with the Pollution Control Agency before this. I've seen some of the discharges right into the, you know, into the river, some of the problems, and you know, so we'll get a cleaner river, a cleaner lake. Mm-hmm. So there are some sort of bigger picture benefits that we get from this.
So there's a lot of information in the packet. We'd be happy to answer any questions. Nick sent this earlier today. He's going to, I think, follow up with the conversation here based on our response to that, but there's a lot of information here, a lot of details. You got a big agenda today, so I think we'll just kind of, at this point, ask for questions.
Okay, Mr. Campion?
Yeah, so you said 2%, the ask is basically 2% of the wastewater treatment plant capacity.
Flow capacity.
Flow capacity. What are we at today?
I didn't calculate that out, but I would guess we're probably at 60%.
Okay. And what's the lifetime? I guess, so what I'm looking at is, like, there's this idea in when you're looking at, like, production of a facility, mm-hmm. like, wasted capacity.
Right.
So, like, our machines are going to, our processing equipment's eventually going to expire and no longer be useful. Is that true regardless of our flow? Whether we're doing 100% or we're doing 10%, the machine gets old and breaks.
Right. I would view this as 1 to 2 years of growth of in the city of Rochester, maybe. 1 year of growth, let's just say. But that's not the, I call limiting factor. So what really is going to limit us to have to spend money is going to be new regulation for phosphorus, yeah. Aging plant. You know, we've got some, you know, parts of the plant that are pretty, you know, they're 30 plus years old. Pure oxygen generating plant is just, it does not last that long. So that is going to be our big issue. And then our loading, you know, our BOD loading, which this really won't add to our, it'll add a little bit to our loading, but currently the industries are really our biggest load.
So the business case, if I were to lay it out, would be that we're going to add 2% to our used capacity on machines that otherwise would sit idle. We have remaining flow that would just sit idle. We're going to recoup more than the cost us to process it, and they're going to help finance whatever improvements down the road we need to make to the facility. Does that sound?
Very good.
Okay.
That's correct. And I should have made it clear when I said DOD, that's basically the organics.
Okay, perfect. That's
all
my
right.
question.
I assume this would require a lift station as well to connect far enough well. Is that lift station then going to be maintained by the system as a whole, or is that going to be maintained by Orinoco?
Orinoco.
Okay, so there's no impact on us of that then. My biggest concern is not necessarily addressing the issues that are there today, but it seems to me that this is, Orinoco is today about 1,000 people or so, is that right, Mayor?
1,500
people today. My issue is not so much addressing the needs of those 1,500 people. This is written in such a way that it allows for the doubling of the population base approximately up there. And the concern is that it doesn't appear to me that there's anything in the contract that allows us to control the externalities. In particular, we know that we are the employment center for Orinoco, and that means there's, you know, if we continue to sprawl out in our development pattern, that has impacts on our transportation system here. And it doesn't seem to me that, it seems to me this contract would allow a doubling of the size of Orinoco, but gives us no mechanisms for which to control the other externalities that we have to deal with. So why wouldn't we just leave the allowable flow rate at 0.2, and at such time that there's a proposal for growth, then we can renegotiate the contract at that point, because I don't see us having any leverage otherwise.
We attempted to address that in some of our later meetings and agreed that in page 11 of your packet, section 3.1, paragraph C, was the best we could do at this point. And basically it talks about the fact that Orinoco would need to develop and adopt a comprehensive plan. We talked about things such as consistency with Rochester's comp plan. We talked about things like them having to set up mobility hubs, offering those as, you know, within the community, things that would encourage density, such as not less than 3 units per acre. We talked about those type of things, but to try to include the specifics, it was felt that we never could really get there and be all-inclusive.
And I agree. We can't get there and be all-inclusive. But the thing is, by signing the contract as it's presented today, we lose our ability to negotiate that in the future. Adopting a comprehensive plan doesn't mean you adopt a good comprehensive plan.
I'm not sure I agree with that, only because, Richard, correct me if I'm wrong, that 3.1, I'm reading that, and it says that the system shall serve only the properties of phases 1A and B, and Orinoco shall not extend the system beyond those limits, et cetera, unless there's agreement by each party.
Yes, so that... So that was the intent.
Doesn't that put the guardrail
right.
on
so,
it? That
so again, about? When you discussed this back in January, you said, you know, if we had interest in this, it would be to serve the yellow area, primarily that area that's already developed and has failing systems.
Right.
And so that's kind of where we started on this. There was some interest on the part of Orinoco to, when they designed their system, well, do we design it just for that area that's shaded in yellow, or should we design it for a longer term? And we said, well, you can design it for a longer term, but after you serve that area that's in yellow, you have to come back and talk to the city.
And that's what this says.
Well, that's my concern. When you say phase 1A and B, show me what you're talking about.
Phase 1A is the yellow without the hatching, and phase 1B is the yellow with the hatching.
Okay, when I saw 1A and 1B, I was assuming that was the two growth areas.
No, and this is and then the green is 1C.
Okay.
And that's the area that would need to come back and talk to you about.
So ultimately, they can't grow geographically beyond their existing limits without the approval of the City of Rochester.
It's about 99% correctly, because there's an area in here
that's not
in the city
that's
completely surrounded that needs to be served. So
I'm not too concerned about that. Yeah. And then... There would be no restrictions on the criteria that the City of Rochester could use at that point.
Yes. There are no restrictions specifically identified that would be limiting or prescriptive. That's correct.
Richard, I guess the one question, I mean, here, the way I understand, you know, that area to work, the future growth areas, that we have the opportunity to review and comment on the comp plan, but ultimately it's, you know, Orinoco's discretion on final adoption, so...
Of the comp plan, but as far as the extension to the YC area, that has to be something that the parties agree to.
Okay. Now, the only thing I would also mention is you have to, I guess it depends on what you believe the range of options here are, so this particular agreement, even as it's constructed, gives you the opportunity to engage in these kinds of discussions with Orinoco. If they build their own facility, we still, you know, have the externalities, as we do with any adjacent community. But no opportunity or mechanism to have the conversation.
And my biggest concern here is ultimately the the business case of, for example, expanding Orinoco by 1,500 people relative to 1,500 additional infill in Rochester. I think the business case is going to be very hard to justify the Orinoco case, and that's why I want to make sure that, and maybe the language, maybe I just need to better understand it or get a legal interpretation ahead of time, but I want to make sure that future councils absolutely must bless any geographic growth beyond that 1% in the area.
Mr. Bildback, then Mr. Campy.
Yeah, and then I guess that was my question. Is that something that can still be addressed? I mean, we're saying they need to bring it back a year prior to all this stuff happening. If you look, Orinoco shall submit to Rochester for prior approval of final plan specifications and schedule for construction extension in 3.2. Could that language be in there to satisfy? Because I agree. I have a little concern about what our future councils would want to do. We don't want to hamstring them as well. So if there could be some language stuck in there to have for them to have to come back to make it more clear that the City of Rochester has comment.
Mr. Did you want to respond to that?
I'll try. Again, I think I want to make sure the council understands that there are two options on the table. One is the agreement before you, and one is no agreement. And the no agreement is basically Orinoco building their own treatment plant, doing their own comp plan, doing their own development at whatever rate, whatever density, whatever land use plan they want. That's an option for them. And so, again, what they're exploring is the option with us and what will be the requirements if they do connect to us. We can address the technical aspects of that, the treatment and the cost and those type of things. As far as the land use issues, that's where I think, honestly, the negotiations lie, is that how much authority, how much control, how much input and influence will the city have on Orinoco's future growth? I mean, it was a very, very cordial conversation, but again, we couldn't come to an agreement on that, and that's something that the community of Orinoco will have to decide, ultimately, is whether they can live with this option that's before you today, or they're going to pursue a different option.
Okay, Mr. Campion, then Mr. Morgan.
So I just want to double up and make sure that I'm abundantly clear here. So it looks like, and I asked about this earlier, 3.1C basically requires joint agreement about the comprehensive plan that would address future land development in the city of Orinoco. And if at such a time as an agreement could not be reached, we would basically have a reason to void our contract.
Well, I think the way I understood it was that we would not approve additional annexation. You know, they could, if we, let's just say we were here and their building was in yellow, that's fine. They want to add, and we don't agree on what they have in their comprehensive plan. Yes. Does that make sense?
Well, okay, so you're limiting it simply to any incremental.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I would suggest that we get a review of that 3.1 section C, because I think, I know a lot of these people, and I think a lot of us probably work with a lot of the people in this community, so I think it's not something that is overly, feels very friendly to go over, but I think also making sure we know all the ramifications of a clause like that, and frankly how complex reaching peer agreement about a development pattern from a community that obviously feels significantly different about their development pattern than what our community feels like could present some pretty substantial changes. And it is a 40-year agreement, so I think there's a lot of reason to spend some time now to hammer out the specifics.
I think in our conversations we made it pretty clear that it's going to be really hard for you to agree on something that's not consistent, or at least not along the same lines of thinking of everything you just went through in your comp plan.
Okay.
To allow another community that's connecting to our community to do something totally different and develop in a different manner and, again, less dense and things like that would be very difficult for the Rochester City Council to support.
Well, I just want to be clear. You made the comment that there were kind of two options before us. So it's go forward with agreement or no agreement. But the no agreement and not working with Rochester, again, requires a massive state bailout of the current infrastructure that's there. And, you know, faced against the option of working with some terms of a contract that they might not appreciate, I think it'd be pretty hard for the state legislature to invest more money, when there is another option on the table. So I don't want to create the message that I don't think there's some ability for us to protect our own interests here. And, you know, and I don't want to gloss over the big picture thing. If you look at what's happened in Orinoco, it's really a lot of suburban sprawl. And that's almost entirely automobile-oriented. And that automobile orientation almost entirely comes into the city of Rochester. And that's probably happening at our biggest peak times. And that is a problem for the city of Rochester. It'd be a problem for any community that was doing the same thing. And that's why I feel there's a need on behalf of the citizens of Rochester to minimize that negative impact from the, you know, from the current development patterns that we've seen for the last 20 years out there. So that's, you know, I am really concerned about that, and I want to make sure we dot our I's and cross our T's to maximize our leverage.
Yeah. On the other side, you have to think about it. I mean, we obviously, not just Orinoco, but regionally have a number of communities that are, you know, obviously mm-hmm. coming into Rochester for employment, and, you know, the challenge is Orinoco or a community similar that may yeah. not have the right mix of density and, you know, other factors that could try to replicate the Rochester development yeah. pattern. And so, you know, from that perspective, I do think the transportation plan that's been done, you know, does reflect the need to have, you know, some of these mobility hubs within Rochester, but that will be accommodating, you know, some of the development activity or people that are coming in to work in the community. But it's a difficult ask for some of these communities that, you know, have developed with the less density, don't have any transit service established within the community to try to, you know, basically replicate our comp plan.
Yeah, I think I think that's the practical reality, right? Like, a development pattern like Rochester's does not work. And so now we're left with, and I think Wendy did a great job of answering my questions, which are basically, I want assurances that we're not subsidizing a pattern that is different from ours. Every response I've gotten back is that there is no subsidy. So now I'm trying to understand if this is actually the business case side of this, which is, what's the value to our community from the 2% additional flow? What is that going to offset in a future plant improvement that looks, don't have a crystal ball, but it looks inevitable, like we will be doing a significant plant update. And how long does this regionally delay the need for, 40 years? 40 years would be a good amount of time to be able to offset Orinoco having to build their own. There's a couple more that I just want to get out for the council to chew on, which is, I brought up, I don't like plans that say this can be voided after 2 years if one of the parties decides to do so. So what I would like to see is just an automatic, this becomes void after 2 years, and we come back to the table if there's a rekindling of this project after a 2-year cycle. Mm-hmm. So that part in particular, I don't want to seem vindictive. What happens once in a while when you're on the council is you'll get surprised by a 2-year timetable that expired 18 years ago, but nobody took a motion to take it off the table, so you're bound by it. And then the other side was talking about the opportunity, and I think Councilmember Wojcik hit it, but if we were to scale the flow to be closer to what we think the actual need is today, and to start more of a review cycle, maybe that's on a 5-year basis, to get council authorization for growth of that. I just missed it in the letter. It wasn't clear of the 400,000 units that we're talking about, how many would we anticipate would be used by what's there today. It sounded like about half is what I got as an estimate.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue there is how large do you design the facility for? You need to design the lift station.
The capacity.
So you're right. So you design it for to serve just the 1A and 1B, or do you design it for some future growth? And then it's how much is that future growth?
That's their decision though, right?
That's right. But that's what they're trying to get some sense from us, because they have to go to the legislature. They're going to the legislature and asking for a certain amount of funding. Well, is that funding going to be for 0.2 MGD or 0.3 or 0.4. Okay. They're suggesting it should be for 0.4, the economies of scale associated with that over the next 40 years. I think that's the biggest issue.
I just wanted to get them out for the council to chew on. The other questions I asked is, do we specifically call out Orinoco will be responsible for connection fees? Yes. There will be no subsidy by the city of Rochester for any connection fee. I got yes. And then the seventh one was, I was asking, do we need to consider the fog ordinance application for out here? And the answer is that they would be responsible for passing an equivalent to us. Are they responsible?
Or follow on.
Okay. And if they do not pass one, then their fog material will be coming to the wastewater treatment plant where we can recycle that.
They're required to pass an ordinance.
So
that brings it to our plant, or they just have to have a management strategy?
They have to have both.
Okay.
So, that, in other words, either they have to adopt our wastewater ordinances, regulations, or adopt something similar or more stringent.
Okay. Thank you.
So again, if they didn't do that, then we would have the agreement written such that we could go to each one of their service establishments and do the same inspections there that we're doing here.
Okay.
I just wanted to follow up. I don't have an issue with serving what's already there, because it's there. There's no undoing that. But based on what's there today, if I were to double what's there today, there'd be a lot of negative consequences for our community. So that's what I'm more concerned about, is the future growth, not necessarily what's what is there today.
Mr. Ruska.
You know, when you listen to this, you want to be a good neighbor. But we also, you know, we're sitting here to try to make sure that our community is run the most efficiently, and we protect our taxpayers and so on. Camping hit earlier on the capacity, that was an issue that I had. So, you know, as we kind of talk about this and come up with maybe, you know, they have two plans. Either we come up with an agreement here, or a second plan would be is they're going to have some big statewide bailout. Has there been any ideas to approach the state about some type of addressing some of the future improvements that we're going to need at our center, to have some investment in that so that we can then justify the reaching out and assisting here that maybe is a more of a reduced amount than the bailout that they might have to face if they're...
I just want to be clear. There's state investment required in either scenario, and so irrespective of which option's chosen, that there will be a state investment needed. Just different. It's a different investment. You know, one investment is more of a wastewater treatment facility. Another is a pipe to Rochester's facility. And then, you know, both scenarios.
So is there any opportunity for us to enhance our treatment center throughout this?
And not probably through this process. However, like I said, the one thing we would be able to do is get a teeny bit of phosphorus allocation, which we want, you know, so we could get a little more added to our total number, but not through that. Doesn't mean there aren't some options when we have to do it, but I don't think there are any ways for us to sort of get paid to do it.
I'm just trying to come up with a win-win scenario here where we could enhance the benefits of the community.
Not that I'm aware of, I should say.
Yeah. Ed, I'm wondering if that's not an opportunity, if Orinoco decides to go with Rochester's plan, to have those discussions with the state and with Orinoco.
Because that helps resolve the issue of aging infrastructure that we don't have, and you know that we're going to have to address soon. It kind of balances it out a little bit, so that's just something I want to throw
in. And we'll definitely be looking at those options when we get there.
Okay, thank you.
Just one other thing, I guess we've seen some of the preliminary calculations for building their own treatment plant versus coming to the city of Rochester's. You know, the balance is, right now those numbers look like it's even cost a little more to come to Rochester. Yeah. Now there's the monthly, you know, they got to operate, okay. And there's all of those in there. So there's certainly many more uncertainties there. But I think the one thing that Richard said that I would repeat is, if we have an agreement with them, at least we can kind of have some, I don't know, control is the right word, but some way to help work with how their growth is versus if we don't.
I would say one benefit, and, you know, probably not, you know, something that's immediate. In the long, 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 long term, I mean, this obviously does create, you know, a force main within the community that future development could connect to. Now, it's not an area that we're necessarily looking to connect to right now. I think we can limit our development potential in that area by not extending other utilities like water or, you know, storm sewer and things like that. But at some, you know, future, you know, time frame, that would then be available to serve, you know, areas of Rochester that are currently not served.
Okay, Mr. Bilderbeck.
Would you recommend then, Richard, Heidi, you were talking, would it be wise then to ask them to do a plan for at least a four? And their sewer, you're talking about the point two, would it make more sense then to make that as a request instead of they go to a point four?
Well, I think that probably is the more appropriate number for what Michael wanted to accomplish, with basically just serving the yellow area. So the additional, and again, this work out quite that way numerically, but for the purpose of the conversation, the point two would be more appropriate for the yellow. Point four is more appropriate for the yellow and the green.
And I think that would give us some better protection in the future as far as any kind of growth they would do. And then also anything in the 30 years down the road that we would do.
Again, Orinoco, I'm sure, is chomping at the bit to speak for themselves here as they're sitting here. Yeah. But, you know, they are trying, we're working with them to try to get them in a position that when they can go to the legislature next month and basically get something on the table that, yes, we have an agreement with Rochester or we don't. The legislature has asked for that. And they want to know, can you guys work this out between yourselves or not? And if you can, great. And if you can't, then what are the what are the other options? So the state, as somebody said earlier, the state's going to help Orinoco figure this out, it would appear, to some level of state funding, whether it's the full amount they're requesting or something less than that. But I think the legislature is prepared to provide some support in the bonding bill for a solution there.
I mean, just to be clear, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, just to kind of keep things moving along, I want to just kind of take the pulse of the council. What I'm hearing is there's some openness to continue this discussion, subject to, there's some questions that Mr. Campion raised, subject to perhaps some additional wording changes to the agreement one before that's ever endorsed, but at least continue the discussion. In other words, not considering an agreement is not something that we're considering. Can we assume, or is there a consensus that we can at least continue the discussion and try to hammer out an agreement?
Do you want to let the people of Orinoco
I don't know. Pulse of the council first, I guess.
I'm willing to continue the agreement. I would rather try to work this out than say no.
I don't think we have a choice. I think we have to continue. I just want some, have our city attorney take a look at it and make sure we have, assurances just in the have future councils protect our interest.
Mr. Hickey?
What was the motivation to go from 150% reimbursement to 110%?
Basically just the economics of this as far as whether it was going to be affordable or not. When we add our plant investment fee, our PIF, our sewer availability charge, and then on top of all of that, then they had a 50% increase in the monthly charge for the residents. They did the present worth calculation of what all of that would be. It basically resulted in the estimate of connecting to Rochester being 30% more expensive than building their own treatment plant. That's their consultant's numbers. But it was basically, what can we do to try to get those numbers closer together? And we aren't going to recommend to you that the connection charge, the PIF, is any less for a non-resident, that the sewer availability charge is any less, but that capital equalization charge, which is set by ordinance, and again, it's been there for a long time, but we've never applied it to an incorporated city before. It's been individual property owners and that sort of thing, and even with the Chester one, the language says that if it's part of an orderly annexation agreement, there is no capital equal, that 50% doesn't apply. So it was just trying to find some room in whether 1.1 is the right factor or whether it should be 1.2 or whatever. We recommended 1.1, so there was that 10% surcharge.
Thank you.
All right. So is that the general consensus? Keep the discussion going with some optimism, hopefully, that we can work through toward a regional solution in this case. All right.
So in that regard, I think that you'll see this again in a week for some decision, because again, they need to take a decision from this council to their constituents in Orinoco and then to the legislature. So we will put something either on the COW or on the council agenda for next Monday, and in the meantime have at least another meeting or two to try to address some of your concerns.
All right, Mr. Ruskin?
Can you, when you do that, have a list of the benefits that Rochester has from this?
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Campion?
Yeah, I'd like either our staff or the consultant staff to work out what the value of this is, because, I mean, there's some positive net value to us through the acquisition of new consumers for our services that we wouldn't realize otherwise. Yeah. So I'd like to have some estimate of what that impact is so that we can justify this.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Good enough. Thank you. Let's move on to our second topic for this afternoon, planning services. Mr. Reimer, are you going to start with that?
Yes, I am. So in your packet is a three-page update report from myself and the county administrator, Heidi Welsh. And as the council knows, during 2018, we've been working on the evaluation of our existing consolidated planning services department. And we're at a point that we're seeking input from you as well as the county board, and then ultimately the PASC has scheduled it for May 11th to discuss this as well. What we've been doing is discussing models for governing, financing, and then service delivery, if you will, delivering the planning services. And we have three different options in front of you. We have what we call the enhanced consolidated department. So picture today's department with revisions and enhancements to it. Hybrid model, where we both have our own departments and then find out what are the appropriate services that should be shared together. I've used examples like GIS. And then complete independent departments where we'd stand up new departments. Hopefully still have the spirit of collaboration, but not necessarily as much as the intent of sharing services. Obviously sharing information and knowledge would still be important to planning like it is today. And so throughout the memo, we laid out some of the criteria that we are trying to apply, like ensuring that we had high customer satisfaction levels, to make sure we have that collaborative spirit, to make sure that we're looking at ways of reducing duplication. And there's a table in the packet that just lays out some of the key areas of governance, employees, funding, ROCOG and how that would be handled. And then something that may not seem like a big issue, but it would be one that we'd have to really think about is office location. Today we are together. And we have posed a couple policy considerations that we thought may be a good way to get the conversation going. So the first one is really around what are your goals? What is the council's goals for the governing, financing, and delivering of planning services? In your minds today, what do you see may be the best model? And then also timing of when we should be looking at this. We've had some very, very informal discussions on this, with looking at, you know, is January appropriate? January may be appropriate for revisions to a consolidated department. It may be a little more difficult to try to stand up a whole new department in the city. But having that conversation and understanding your expectations as well would be appreciated. With that, I think I'll turn it over to you, have the conversation. We're really looking forward. Do we get on the path of continuing to evaluate 3, 2, or 1? So, with that.
All right. So, who would like to start?
Mr. Woodard. I'll give it a shot. I would. I cannot in good conscience support option A. I think there are just some things that are so important to the city of Rochester that haven't been getting done, not the least of which is the maintenance of our important comprehensive plans. You know, there's an idea that we're saving money here, but what we forget is we put millions of dollars, we're in the process of putting millions of dollars into updating plans that should have been maintained at a current rate. I would prefer the option B, the hybrid model. The only thing is there's a lot of gray area there between option B and option C, but I would say that there are a number of items that make perfect sense that we should be sharing resources. Things, GIS is the example that was used. It would be silly to have two GIS departments. But somebody's got to be there helping with corridor development and redevelopment in Rochester. Somebody's got to be able to do small area plans. Somebody's got to make sure that we're using the ROCOG dollars as effectively as possible. And, you know, I see a lot of these things just aren't happening today. And for me, hands down, the most important thing is there is no collaborative model when our employees disappear without our knowledge or consent. And that's why I think option A is out for me. My preference is option B, understanding that what is hybrid and what is not is open for discussion.
Just so we kind of take a quick pulse, as I look at those four options, with one being the existing, I agree change needs to occur, so I'm not in support of the current model. I'm also not in support of the independent departments, the departments at the other end. So I need to know more about the two middle ones, the enhanced consolidated or the hybrid model. But that's generally at a high level where I tend to fall is I'll call that option 2 or 3, whatever, however we're numbering those. So
you lost me at the double negative. I'm sorry. You're not. I missed that. I got confused.
There's four options here. One being existing.
You're not in favor of the.
I'm not in favor of that.
Let's get that clear, because there's three options.
There's three options.
Look at the next page.
Yeah.
And those three options have the dark header above them.
Yep.
So that would kind of, just to be clear, let's go A, B, and C, so we don't have a D in there.
Okay. And the reason I said that is because there's always an option to do nothing, which is what we have today, and that I don't agree with. So if you want to call it A, B, and C, that's fine. So then I would be in support of either A or B, but I need more information, not C. All right, Mr. Ruskin.
I'm going to go a little different route on this. I'm supportive of C. I really believe that we've taken a real, you know, you'd think that cooperation, working together, consolidated department would be the way to the right approach. Work together, I think you'd create a lot of efficiencies and so on, but I'm upset about the way that, you know, the process of terminating our city planner, or county planner it may be, but in our eyes, it was our city department head that was in the process, right in the middle of doing the DMC plan, the transit plan, the comp plan, and all the efforts that we've been working on together here, and we had no oversight or any input on that process. So to me, that shows that maybe this doesn't work, you know, I guess you'd think there's efficiencies. If there's some way that we can certainly, I don't want to reduce any efficiencies. If there's some ways that we have them, I'm all for that. But I definitely want to see roll call be under the city and the MPO be under the city. And I think when we start to see that, break that down, we're going to find out that financially that works.
Mr. Campion and Mr. Hickey, go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't see the completely independent because, as we mentioned, GIS is kind of the one we keep throwing out here. I think there's some places where you could have some efficiencies where there wouldn't be a conflict of interest. Obviously, the current model, at times it's been a successful model over the years. And there's oftentimes when the city and the county's priorities and such are going to align, and when that happens, it works beautifully. But when our goals and objectives don't align, that's where you run into the contention. So I do see the utility of the hybrid model. And again, I think things like GIS, I don't see necessarily any areas of contention. But the big question on all these, we have to bound this with dollars. I mean, where are we going to get the money to do this? So I think there's a lot to like about the hybrid model. But I mean, just to get a rough bound on the costs and how would we come up with that?
Yeah, I can give you a. So we've been working on some higher level frameworks for each of these. And in the independent department, so C, option C, we've ranged it out as a net annual cost of $1.5 to $2 million, somewhere in there. Obviously, it's a large ballpark. The hybrid, depending, I would say that's in the around that probably million to $1.5 million or somewhere in there. There's probably some savings. We don't know if it's large savings. It'd be more just looking at reducing duplication, and then. The consolidated, one of the things that the county board has asked for is how is the city of Rochester paying for services. So what we've said is we have to come up with a formula that lays it out. And it could be, we've all agreed, just so everyone knows that, it could be exactly as it is today that we're not having anything out of the pocket. But trying to come up with a data-driven formula that both council and the county board can point and say that's why it's the way it is. So if that helps.
Okay. Mr. Campion?
Sure. So I don't think the flaws of a joint organization have been better exposed than the recent staff shakeup that happened. I was on the president at the time of the PASC, the joint organization that's supposed to oversee the planning department, and had completely no forward information about what was happening. So this again gets to this idea that we can struggle as organizations to establish a mechanism by which joint management is possible. I have no doubt that with several months more of investment of our staff's time, we can come up with something that divvies up the management. And the problem is that we're still going to be stuck with the same problems, which is that you have split leadership, you have split commitments, you have split organizational priorities. And where they line up, GIS is the example I hear, it should be trivial for us to carve off a GIS organization that sits entirely separate from planning. Mm-hmm. The GIS is a fundamental component of what we do as a city. It helps keep a lot of our services available, helps with the planning efforts for both county and city responsibilities. But I don't see that to be a reason to get away from the broader application, the comprehensive view of what planning should be for us. We've often talked about economic development. We've talked about how we better integrate transit, how we do it. There are opportunities here to not look at this as a negative of we're losing a joint department. It can also be a positive of we have a new opportunity to realign our internal department structure to better leverage cohesive city-delivered services. So my thought is much more toward independent department. I'm leaning, frankly, I think we would find that we will struggle for it mightily, especially with what I feel is a recent trust problem that we've had, to develop an MOU that's going to make people feel comfortable that this organization is truly a shared organization. And frankly, the way that that took place really strikes me that we're operating with different field manuals here. I don't think that that would have happened in reverse, and it concerns me quite a bit. I had two other things that I think are fundamentally important. ROCOG. It's $2.5 million worth of regional funding. The city that is absolutely critical to the functioning and road projects that take place in this community, and we cannot lose our voice at the table for ROCOG. That is fundamental, full stop there. MPO dollars and MPO management stuff that takes place. Mm-hmm. I've sat in the PASC now long enough to know those sorts of conversations we absolutely cannot lose a voice in. I will be hard-pressed to justify the city expending dollars on employment where we're not the decider on what the employment is and whether or not the objectives of the individual are being met. So that would be, I think, in a nutshell, the reason I'm really fundamentally C-only at this point.
Mr. Bilbeck? Yeah, I guess my feeling is I understand, I hear where Mr. Campion's coming from, but I also realize, too, that we're going to have to be a part of what goes on around the city of Rochester, which is a county. My feeling is that working together is a better way to do it. I don't believe the way we've done it has worked, and so I'm leaning more to hybrid. I think the fact is we need to have some of these discussions and have some of these ideas worked out. In a meeting that we had, joint meeting between the city and county, and Mr. Wojak and myself sat in that group, the county agreed that they needed to have small community planners. Mm-hmm. And that kind of fell by the wayside. It was something that was agreed upon that then went away. So I think what needs to really happen is we need to really clear the paths of what goes down what road, and how do we influence it or how do we not. I think what we've seen, I agree with Mr. Campion and Mr. Ruska, that what's just happened is kind of a magnified misgiving of the way the process should work. It just didn't work the way it should, and we need to figure out those lines to be better. I don't feel that separating away with as busy as the city and the communities around Rochester and the county are makes sense, but I do believe that we have to better clarify what our roles and expectations are. Yeah. So I'm more leaning toward the hybrid.
Mr. Ruskin?
You know, we tried this consolidation department for a lot of years here in planning. We also tried to do it Parks Department, I think HR over the years. The only way it's really going to work is if we start at the top and consolidate the governments. Mm-hmm. If we can do that, and this is a time that makes some sense to look at that. Yeah. You know, if you had 9 representatives in the city county government, yeah, you put a dot in the middle of the population, you divide it 9 ways up to the county lines, I think everything would work better together. But this, you know, you just save $500,000 right out of the gate right there. So that's kind of, you know, something that I think should be looked at a little bit. If we really want to consider consolidated departments, it should come from consolidated leadership. Otherwise, mm-hmm, we're going to have these challenges every time.
Yeah, then
Mr. Ruskin, or I'm sorry, Mr. Mugg.
I mean, that's what Nashville did, largely. And, you know, and in reality, if you... You know, I wouldn't necessarily make a pie out to the county borders. I keep common interest communities together, but I think that's just it. Is you can't. It's a no-win situation to serve multiple masters like that, and it's not working for anybody. And I think the pushback from the community that will get on this is, oh, you're going to be spending all this extra money on repetitive departments. But I think what people need to realize is, we are pumping millions of dollars annually right now into a system that's not working. So we're not really saving that money for anybody. And when you see the challenges we have in getting basic things done in the community, there's a lot of costs associated with that too. And you know, we've done some things together that we've broken up before. I know Bilderbeck and I were around for the public safety or the emergency management. And my biggest thing, and I tend to agree with what Mr. Ruska is saying about basically having our own departments, but maybe what I would need to separate exactly where I fall in between B and C is having staff come back and say, okay, there's clear consensus that this is more efficiently done by one group than by two. Get, put that in one pile and then have another thing in the other pile. And
I would just say I want to go one step further because I want staff to look strategically at this because I think there's a real opportunity, again, to get the better department alignment with what we want the functions to do. The joint, where it's joint and where it's obviously joint, I'm all ears. So if that makes me hybrid model, then fine. But I'd rather see that organization be a services organization that supports both and to move it so that it's joint funded and frankly doesn't have leadership the way that I'm looking for a planning organization to have the leadership. That's the real difference is I think that you can build an organization that is not a absolutely critical component to the city of Rochester and keep that joint and let Rochester continue to kind of define its own journey there in terms of the planning efforts. And it's not an effort to put up an artificial barrier between the county and the city, but it is one to recognize that where we've struggled, we haven't done ourselves favors, and we have this opportunity to take advantage of tremendous amount of economic opportunity that's taking place. We can get better alignment, I think, if we have those resources being pooled inside the city and aligned with the city objectives mm-hmm. independently from what we have to do as a joint organizational effort.
Ms. Johnson.
What are we currently spending for the planning department?
So from the day-to-day, we, the city, do not provide any funds. We do pay for the comp plan and other focused efforts for the city of Rochester.
Okay.
So from our tax levy, for example, does not go to planning services.
What have we spent on specific things?
Thinking about the fees.
Yes. Do you know what we spent last year?
I would have to look that up. Project. I don't know. If, you know, I mean, comp plan was the driver.
Yeah, it varies, but the comp plan was funded differently. It wasn't funded out of the levy, and along with some other studies. So, realistically, the county is able to retain the development fees, which vary from year to year. But I think, as Steve indicated, your net projected deficit, if you were to bring this in house, is in that $1.5 to $2 million range. Now, that being said, the county is obviously through their levy supporting this, somewhat to that level. And so the question is if we were to go different directions, would the county reduce to offset? Can't answer that question, obviously, but that's part of the discussion I think you have to have going forward. If there is a reduction, it's not going to be 100%, but there is some potential there, if we're bringing it in and they were paying for it previously.
Would that also, having separate departments, would that streamline development? I know there's a lot of, when people are looking at development, there's a lot of hiccups and a lot of time that it takes to do that. Would that streamline that, or?
I'm not sure if that by itself. One thing I can say overall, though, is we're going to be putting a lot of effort into the streamlining, and by potentially having its own department or consolidated with other like department areas that are in the development services, parts of engineering, mm-hmm. building safety. There could be, I guess I call it a planning or a development services renaissance or something, where we could really look, as you mentioned, strategically at the entire process as well.
Okay.
So I wouldn't directly attribute it to this. Either way, we're going to have to go down that path. Mm-hmm. If it's your department, obviously, the conversation is more around this table.
Okay. And go ahead. One more question, and then I'll be done. Okay. What are we looking at for a time frame to make decisions on this? Or is this just...
Well, it's following your lead,
okay.
And the key to getting to a final decision is, like you're doing now, helping us start to hone down where we're focusing our effort. Because if we have to study three each option, it's going to take much longer. But if you want us to study option C, I've heard a lot about B, we can do that and bring back, as suggested, looking at where we'd potentially have the shared services, where we have the standalones.
Okay.
And that's probably... a few month process to really get the level of detail you're going to need.
Okay. Well, you can take A out for me.
All right. Mr. Bilderbeck, then Mr. Woodbury.
I was just wondering, Steve, next week, the week after, you're coming to the PASC?
Yeah, that'll be next Friday.
What are you planning on bringing forward to that group?
Well, now we'll bring forward, obviously, the input we received from the council. Say this is where at least the city of Rochester is looking at us heading. The county board doesn't talk about this till the 15th, so it's after that. So your counterparts aren't going to be able to share their information, but still have that same conversation you guys asked.
And I want to hit on a couple things. I'm interested also in knowing what the legal ramifications are. I imagine there's notices we have to give and what the timelines are for that in terms of
6 months, I think.
Potentially dissolving PASC, the contract between how we handle ROCOG, how we handle MPO, and just what the timeline is for that. And then also I like to talk a little bit about the tax impact too, in terms of, I do kind of chuckle when we get asked about, well, how is the city contributing to this? I'm like, well, the city's contributing because our people and businesses pay the vast majority of all the taxes in the county. And it's important to remember that if we move $1 million from the county to the city, I think this group is of the belief that we're going to get a more efficient, more effective program out of it. And the net tax impact of that of the people of Rochester is not significant when you factor in the change. Now, there's no guarantee necessarily that their department becomes smaller, but with the amount of time going to the city, you would think that would probably happen.
So, and I appreciate there might not be unanimity here, but is there at least a consensus that we should go deeper on this hybrid model? We know we need more information.
That sounds
fair. And I know you've taken kind of the broad brush view, but are we asking staff to go deeper and give us more detail on the hybrid, or Mr. Ruska?
I'd like to see both B and C looked at in detail. This is the first time I've heard costs. You know, we haven't seen that before, so understanding the effects of the MPO, what that does to the dollars that come from that, I think all that should be factored in and start to kind of get a little bit better detail on it.
Okay.
But those are the two that I'm interested in.
Yeah. And that's what we do, is start, and I'll bring it down a little deeper. Okay.
And I would say I'm kind of in the exact same place. I think I heard that there's some consensus for at least, even if we go down that C model, figure out the stuff that just has to be one department and keep that separate, and even in looking at that C, figure out what's this. Clearly we got to do some things together because it would be silly not to. And if we could break out that list of things that could potentially be done in partnership or in-house versus things that should be done in partnership, I think that's the way to go. I concur with most of the group that maintaining or enhancing the status quo is not acceptable.
Okay. So we can at least drop option A off the list.
All right, yeah.
For further exploration.
And that's what we're looking for.
So the only thing I want to do is free staff to also bring back the strategic decision here.
Oh, yeah.
So where there is alignment with other organizations, especially if we see like consolidation of our own internal departments, or if it be realignment and how we do that, what I'd like to see is, you know, maybe there's a hybrid model that's minimum viable with those shared services. Two is, here's where we strategically want to be. I'm asking our staff specifically. You've heard me repeat this a number of times about getting the economic, getting the economic firepower aligned in-house. And then option C, which is just two completely standalone. So I know that doesn't reduce your number of models, but getting rid of enhanced to me would be a strong start.
All right. Anything else on that topic? Do you have your direction?
Yep, we do. Thank you.
All right.
Did we have any county staff that wanted to weigh in, or do we have anyone here from the county here? Not necessarily the planning department, but administration. Do you have any?
Mm-hmm.
No one's here from administration?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chalk that up to our list of reasons, too.
All right, let's move on to item 3, which is tall grass and weed ordinance. Who's going to step into the ball, or Mike?
I can. It's all self-explanatory, though.
Yeah. Are you happy?
Well, I'll explain it. Do you want to go? The Nick Happy Meter?
So, Councilmember Kemp and I met and talked about the options after your council meeting earlier. And after a conversation, we pointed out that the administrative fine process progress we was working to what we wanted to do, which is change behavior ultimately. The real issue we found was really a financial burden by people wanting to contest what that administrative fine was going to be. And the issue had been, I think there were several people last year that came forward and said, geez, the cost is so high that it makes sense to combat that administrative fine process. In reality, I think that when we point out that we can prove there's a violation that's out there, it may not have a noticeable increase in the hearings for that portion of it. There are other hearings that may come up as being problematic, and then Nissa, I think, provided your memo on that topic. Mm-hmm. regardless of the administrative fine portion for the Tall Grass retail, we did talk about lowering that cost down to allow people to have that possibility of contesting that hearing. And we gave flexibility in the ordinance for changes that would occur.
Okay. Campion.
So this would be pretty quick for the council. I think it's mostly like it's an issue of the appearance. When someone comes in to contest a fine, they are usually getting fined as it's like $75 for the admin fine, right?
It's $100.
$100.
Or for the fine itself.
Yeah, for the admin.
60 for the first time, 90, then 120.
They're getting fined $60, and they're being charged $50 to contest it. Mm-hmm. And it feels like you got me either way. And I totally understand that. And it's really hard to have a response back. And I think we can show them the math that says, like, you're paying 50 and we're paying 50, and that's how it goes. My thought is to lower that to, like, $30 or $25. The city picks up $25 more of the burden, but mostly to make it obvious that if you really feel like you have an issue, we're not trying to get you on either sides. Contest it, help us better our policy, and we'll talk about that. The one thing, a piece of feedback, and they're right. Financially, this is not this is more of a community embracing move than a financial business case move. It's when people feel like they have been targeted with something like this, they want to have access to a process and that due process that they feel like they can go through to get themselves heard. And frankly, I think we, for a fairly de minimis amount, can provide that for them. And I basically asked staff that if we do that, to then keep us aligned or keep us aware if all of a sudden we start getting, you know, 20, 30 times the number of appeals, we'll know we have to take another look at this. But overall, I struggled, and I think Mr. Nygberg can attest to that. I went through this thing trying to find a way to make the policy better, and I think at this point, the policy is hard to make better. We have 12 inches of overgrowth before it's an issue, and that's a lot. You know, most of my neighbors are complaining around 5 or 6, so I don't know how we make it a lot better, and we all dislike it. So at this point, my recommendation is really the Parks Department brought forward a number of, I would say, are pretty mundane business changes to the ordinance that really cover some self-learning about the definition of a boulevard and other stuff. I would recommend we basically we lower it to $25. The city will pick up a slightly bigger portion. Again, $25 per hearing, of which I think there were...
We had two hearings this past year for Tallgrass and Weed. Same person contested it. The first one we won, and the attorney that represented, or was the arbiter, said basically the city is correct. The arbiter made some suggestions to make changes in the ordinance, which we plan on coming back forward to you now, like we laid out. The owner contested again, and the arbiter weighed in his favor because we didn't make the changes in the ordinance. So
this year will be the third.
So we're talking about, for those two cases, a total of $50 net difference to the city in order to kind of make sure people feel welcome to contest if they feel that they've actually been.
We had several people that did come forward and say, I want to contest it. What's the process? That came to me and talked to me. We outlined the process. We shared with them the photos that we had of them showing the violation. That went away then because they knew they were not going to win that arbitration or that violation.
Well, I like the idea of making the cost reasonable, whatever that number turns out to be. I also like the language in the ordinance where we give them a little more time to resolve the issue on their own. The only caveat I've got, and I realize we only had, looks like 27 in 2017, are those habitual offenders. I know this gets more complicated, but there should be some penalty if we're getting called back to the same property again and again. It sounds like there were 4 properties where you were called back 3 times.
So that fee does go up each time we go back. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's $60 for the first time, $90, then $120.
All right.
Obviously, it's more of a thorn in our side to go back to the same property when they know better. I can tell you that some of these properties, even the ones that are first-time violators each year, are repeats from year after year. So it does not go that way.
Well, as long as there's some escalation there.
Does that go far enough for you? I mean, like, that's partly has been one thing I was looking at, is if we reduce to $25, do we increase this repetitive thing to be like, it's, what is that, intelligence-led policing? It's intelligence-led weed control, that we're going to target the repeat offenders here so that they're not you know, causing problems. So I'd be happy taking that to $150 or $180.
No, I'm fine with that. Just so there's some scale there, so that so you make the cost of appealing it, that's reasonable, that's fine. I'm okay as long as there's an escalated charge to actually do the work. Mr. Roach and then Mr. Luskin.
I'm just, I've learned over my years that there's nobody better arguing with Mr. Campion than Mr. Campion. So if he's resolved that argument with himself, I'm content with where he's coming from.
All right. Did you have a comment?
Yeah, Mike, on some of these properties, 418 18th Street that I text you about every couple weeks, it's abandoned properties and there's nobody there. And, you know, neglect like that to a neighborhood needs to be hammered on. You just can't do that. So I'm sure that a couple of those were from that same location because there's just nobody there. They're not learning from it. They're just ignoring it. And so it never gets any better. But
And no offense, but we used to be really cheap. They call us. We manage your property. We go maintain it. This process now, I think, is starting to have a process where it does start to hurt them financially. So it's a help, I think, that way.
And I think we can all feel into it. I guess I'm a little worried about lowering the price too much because, I don't know if there's any chance to do a winner-take-all. If they go to it, then whoever wins gets free and the other one has to pay for it, you know, like they do in court. That might be an answer, too. That way, whoever puts the money up, if you want to win it.
I like that. 50-50, and if you win the case, you get your money refunded.
You know, something like that because, the cost that I think we got today from the city clerk showed, what was it, $470 per appeal. I don't feel comfortable about us reducing what we're charging increasing that cost. So,
actually, that's perfect. That gets right, like, literally to the nature of this, which is if you sit down with Mike or with Richard and they take you through, here's why you got fined, and you still want to press it, then it's not going to cost you $50 if you have a solid case. It costs you nothing to contest your fine. I like that idea.
Okay.
One of the better ones I've heard today. Way to go.
Mr. Bilderback. I like winner take all, but my question is, we've got to figure out a better way to deal with the repeat offenders because, like Mr. Rusk, I have a few in my neighborhood that every couple weeks I get a call that the grass has gone bad again and they're not doing anything after you come through and made a hay field. Now the weeds are going up through the hay field. So.
If we could, let's try one more year the way we have it set up right now. If the violations and the repeat violations still stay as high as they are at roughly 30, 35 someplace in that range, we can come back to you and change that to a higher rate per offense for the second, third times.
Is there a possibility if we have repeat offenders and we know the ones that are there every few weeks you're getting the calls again, can we just go out and figure they're going to be offenders again and go out and give them a warning? After a week and a half when the grass again hasn't been touched and it's growing like crazy?
I'd rather not because it increases staff time to manage that. We're again managing their property for them.
But we're looking at 30. How many multi-offenders do we have?
It was roughly 30.
Yeah, and I would bet the ones that I'm talking about and Mr. Rusk had talked about, if they're abandoned homes, you know that every couple weeks you're going to have to come back and do it anyhow. And to wait for the neighbors to call the complaint in is maddening to the neighbors. If there was something that we could do, we know the house is abandoned. Mm-hmm. It's been that, I can show you a house for 3 years that's been abandoned. If we could just put that on the list, because what happens every few weeks, you're back doing it anyhow. And then we all deal with the angry neighbors who've had to call and go, what are you gonna do? Every couple weeks I have to call in the same place. If you could have a list, I would bet it wouldn't be more than 10. But those are the ones that are really maddening to the neighborhoods as well as to us when we get those phone calls.
So in order to wrap this up, if there's support from the council, I can get consensus. I would support the changes as written by the Parks Department and changing the administrative fine payment fee to be a winner-take-all system with like a $50 upfront that gets refunded if they win the case. If we have consensus, I think we can move on.
People okay with that?
I am, but I want to hear Mike's answer.
And then, you know what?
Question.
What would be great is if you took that up and you brought back
proposal. You know what? I had brought that up before, and I thought I actually had an agreement once, and then it fell by the wayside. So
I don't have a good answer on the solution for that, Mark. I can talk with Jason about some language modifications. Again, I'm not sure. We start saying you're on this blacklist, so to speak. How do you get off that blacklist?
Well, the fact when they sell the property, I mean, the fact is these are abandoned properties that have been abandoned for 3 years or plus, and they haven't, the people who aren't making any attempt to move them in the banks. And so it just becomes a nuisance to us over and over and over again.
Okay, Mr. Ruska?
Well, I was going to say, my neighbors didn't call. Like, I drove by and saw it one day and called, and then I drove by it periodically and kept calling, but it's now been the House Habitat for Humanity's taken it over. Okay. So hopefully they'll be responsible property owners, and they've taken the whole house down because it was that badly neglected. But I don't know that a blacklist is a great idea. You know, I mean, I'm open to whatever, but I think it's just an awareness of your neighborhood, and once we see them and know about them, it's easy for us to stop by and check them, or it's kind of our job too, so.
Okay. So one thing I think communities have done, especially during the foreclosure crisis, was they created these nuisance property registration lists, and you can get off them by not, you know, you have to register, and you're compelled to register. I don't know all the details, but it's something we can explore. If you continue to not meet the criteria for being on that list, you then don't have to register the next year. So, I mean, we could explore that, but it's a little bit of a different animal.
Can you just, I guess I don't know that I'll necessarily support like a registration list, so I'd like to like see an example first.
No, I agree. It's just a suggestion, I think, that's something we could look at that speaks to, I think, what Councilman Bilderbach is
concerned
about.
I would say that I support the consensus that you discussed, but also if when this comes forward, if Mr. Bilderbach has an amendment that he's interested in, I'm more than happy to take that up too. So that way we'll make sure it gets addressed.
Yeah.
Mahalo.
All right. So I'll probably bring this back at the next council meeting.
All right. Sounds like that's a yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Moving on to our last formal item today is the Second Street Southwest geometric layout. Richard, or who's going to step us through that one?
So Dave Sonnenberg, who's principal of StanTech, is going to give the presentation today. The PowerPoint was sent to you. Some of the supporting staff here on the project team is here today to answer any questions. So we'll just get started.
Well, Mr. President, Mr. Mayor, council members, we have some large-scale drawings. Would you like those rolled out? Well, and unfortunately, the technology is...
Question for the council. This is phase four of the project, so we're well into this. So I wonder if there should...
Phase four means phase four, Second Street.
Right,
so
right. But I mean, it's a project that we've seen several times. How detailed do you want to get into that?
I haven't seen it. And I do.
What I want to say too is, I'm happy looking at the drawings somewhere else. But just a kind of a process thing that I wanted to raise is that we've had a really nice group of stakeholders that have come together a number of times to look at this. And my biggest concern here is that it looked to me that there were a couple fairly significant changes in here that they've never seen. So I very much want to pick this up and keep it going. But I think, if anything, from working with so closely with the neighbors on 4th Street, I want to make sure that these people who have been part of the process get a chance to see some of these fairly significant changes before it comes to the council for a decision.
Can you present what's in the slides? Let's just leave the map aside for now.
My plan is to...
We have those in our packet.
Is to go through this relatively quickly. Obviously, you read your packets, and you don't need me to rehash these slides. So we've been at this for a while. You know this is phase four of Second Street. I'm going to focus just briefly on the process that we went through to get to where we are now. I'm going to touch on what I think are the key points on the technical drawings, if you will, so you understand what's going there. There we go. And we're going to ask for your support for the geometric layout plan. And we also want to talk about pursuing federal funding for transit center and pedestrian subway. This is something that, as you mentioned, Mr. Wojcik, that has evolved over time. This project has been going on for quite some time now. We had a pretty aggressive public engagement process, and then the public realm process came on top of that. So we've been through this quite a bit. We've involved quite a few people, and we've had individual meetings with all of the property owners.
We have a question here, Mr. Hickey.
I had a question on this slide. Looking at the projected growth of Rochester as a city over the next quarter of a century, why would you think that the traffic would only go up 3% in a quarter of a century?
Why would I...
On the slide right here, it talks about average daily traffic.
Yes.
So we've seen the projections for overall growth of Rochester over the next quarter century, but this shows a traffic growth of only 3% over a quarter of a century. I'm just curious.
This came out of the regional model that's developed by ROCOG, and our model for this project is based on that regional model. It's the same model that you're using for your DMC integrated transportation planning, and it is premised on this particular street going heavily transit in the future. And the real growth is going to be limited to this section of 2nd Avenue or 2nd Street between 11th and 16th Avenues, because that's where the origins and destinations are. You're going to get a lot of traffic coming into St. Mary's. You're going to get the traffic for the patients and the visitors and whatnot. But in general, the regional model says traffic isn't going to grow because Rochester isn't going to let it grow. We're going to use transit. We're going to use more active forms of transportation that increase the use of individual vehicles. So that's the premise that we were given, actually. We had no choice but to use this model because this is the approved forecast for the region. Sorry, long answer to a short question.
That's fine.
Another
is
question. Is it possible to make a comment on that? Is it possible to make a comment on that, Mr. President, or
no? We want to hear the presentation, but I've got a question from Mr. Ruskin.
There's only going to be one westbound lane, permanent westbound lane?
Well, no. That's part of the evolution that that has occurred here. Okay. What you see here is what the analysis says is necessary. And we had actually developed a concept plan which had the two eastbound lanes, one westbound lane during normal traffic, and then a parking lane that would be stripped during the PM peak to give you those two westbound lanes to carry that traffic. When we went into the public realm, public engagement project process, then it evolved, and the street section actually began to get larger again. And I'll get to that before too long. Where's my cursor? We also looked at all the bus routes. 1,000 boardings per day is where we're at now. We have a lot of bus routes out there that you know. Commuter buses, 49 in the morning, 32 in the afternoon. Right now there are 15 stalls of on-street parking. This layout will allow 11 to remain, should you wish them to remain. We looked at accidents. Nothing jumped out at us. This is pretty normal for what you see in a corridor like this. Accidents are typically at the intersections. This is 89 accidents over a period of 5 years. So what you see now is a proposal for two eastbound lanes, two westbound lanes, one westbound transit lane during PM peak hours, which is utilized for parking during the non-PM peak hours. The bus bay is pretty similar to what you see now, except there's a taper going into it, and we've carried the lane all the way to 12th Street. And I'll explain that a little bit more when we get to that. So that's the general layout. That's what you see there. I know it's hard to see. That's where we brought some drawings. These are the existing conditions. What I want to point out to you is these two vertical lines on either side, that's the right-of-way. If you stand on the bridge over the highway and look to the east, that's what you see. South is on the right, north is on the left. And as I go through more of those, it stays consistent for that. And you'll notice between 11th and 13th Avenue, we are out of the right-of-way already. Existing conditions has what would typically be thought of as public infrastructure on Mayo property. And then the bottom typical section is 3 bus bay. This is what is proposed. You'll notice we're still out of the right-of-way. We're going to have to acquire right-of-way if we're going to go with that. I'll just let it go at that. You've seen that. This is from 16th Avenue to 14th Avenue. The diagram on the top shows what is being proposed to be built as part of this project. The diagram on the bottom shows how you can expand this to be more compliant with what the public realm design process came up with. We tried to design this so that as you want to expand it, should you choose to do so, you don't have to come back and tear out and rebuild. And that's a little easier to see on the next line, on the next drawing. The red lines, if you look at the curb up on top, this is from 16th to 14th Avenue, that red line, I keep losing my cursor. I know I'm technology challenged, but I shouldn't have to lose a cursor. Pretty much lines up with what you could do in a public realm type of concept if you wanted to expand it. In other words, the curb lines can stay where they're at, and the pedestrian and transit improvements and those sorts of things can occur in the sidewalk area as redevelopment occurs. And you get more right of way from the redevelopment. This is from 13th over towards 11th. Same concept. I'm going to stand up if that's okay. This is easier. This is where the bus bay is now. And this is what I was mentioning previously. What we're proposing is that rather than bringing the buses back out into a general traffic lane, we continue that lane to the new signal here, and we would put in a transit advantage signal, what's called a Q-jump. We would put in a signal system that has a light just for the buses in there. We would allow them to jump. They would get the green in advance of general traffic so that they could move out and get into that general lane without being blocked in during the peak periods, like I'm sure they are sometimes. Mm-hmm. We would also do that. I won't switch back, but back at 13th, we would do the same thing at 13th, so they could move out of that bus lane in advance of the general traffic getting the grade. And again, this is a section we just looked at from 13th to 11th Avenues, mm-hmm. and you'll notice that the curb lines pretty much stay in the same place. Look from the top to the bottom. That's proposed now, and possibly later at the bottom. And in between, you see what the cross-section would have been coming out of the public realm design process. We tried to keep that as close as we could to working with the concepts that they brought out. And this is just through the bus bay. We were asked to talk a little bit about budget. Up on top, phase 4-1, this is really for the 13th Avenue project. There's some 12th Avenue work in there as well. It's utility improvements that are prerequisite to the utility improvements that need to go underneath 2nd Avenue or 2nd Street. Mm-hmm. This budget for the street improvements itself are close to $7 million. This is a really important element right here, this $1,770,000. And I'll explain why when we get to the scheduled slide. You held the open house for the utility work on 13th and 12th last week. We are proposing that that will come forward for bids in July, and construction will start this fall and continue through 2019. The project schedule for the street work itself, and I'm going to go right to the, if I can get my cursor again, right to the key date. It's this one right here, August of 2019. You'll notice construction is shown to start in October. The federal funding that you already have in hand is contingent upon it being done before we get into federal fiscal year 2020, which starts the 1st of October 2019. So we have to be under contract and actually have a draw on that contract before the 1st of October, or your federal funds go away. So everything is keyed on that. We thought we had plenty of time when this project started back in 2015, I guess it was, but we've used up quite a bit of that. I'm also going to touch on transit improvements, because those are brought in as a potential element of consideration. The Tim's Tonic building is where a transit center has been envisioned, I believe. And we are assisting Rochester Public Transit with putting together a an application for categorical evaluation. And so these are just some of the exhibits that are in that. You'll note up here the passenger boardings. When I said approximately 1,000, that's these two numbers added up. And of course, these were put together late last year. So you can see they're already going up over that 1,000 figure and will continue to grow. Just some more exhibits from the application. This is a layout of the proposed pedestrian tunnel. The transit center would be over here. There are grade issues. So this particular case, we have to sort of do a switchback to match the acceptable ADA grades to get it over there. A rendering of what it could look like. We have more. A larger than typical bus shelter in front of the hospital. This is actually a picture of one of your subways in downtown now. And so that's what the subway would look like. It would be built. This comes from St. Paul. Just shows what a front could look like should you choose to do a transit center in concert with private development. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. This is the one at River Center. The Ordway is right to the right. Here's Wells Fargo. And those particular elements of the project, if indeed they do become part of the project, about $3.5 million for that pedestrian subway. That's just to get the structural elements in, I believe. And then $8.1 million for the transit center itself. And you'll note the asterisk, construction to occur when funding is available. These numbers are 2020. Right now, we're in the request for environmental classification. And you can see there are other steps. I don't know how exactly we would get through all of those and still meet the federal funding deadline for the roadway. And I was told to leave as much time as I could for discussion and questions, so I apologize for the rapid-fire presentation.
Good job. I'm
happy to discuss with you anything you might like. We've got Joe Palin, he's the project engineer from Stantec, and Karen Vasek. I'm sort of behind him over the side. He's the project engineer for our partner SRF on this particular design.
All right, Mr. Campion.
So last week at the transit overlay district hearing, I met with one of the business owners from the strip that's now indicated as a transit center. Mm-hmm. Are they being made aware that this is a 2020 reality by us? Because they said that they hadn't heard or seen any final design for the corridor.
The 2020 reality is based on whether or not the funding is available. We just used 2020 because we needed a point in time to try to tell you what a reasonable cost estimate would look like.
So which is the transit center, the one the acquisition of that property has been built into?
The yes.
Okay. Mr. Wilcher? So a couple of miscellaneous points. Dave, if you had some comments about the model, if you could just send them to the council. I don't want to discuss the validity of numbers when it's a scientific database model that we've been using for so very long. I've had so much time to discuss and poke at. This is not the time to be poking at the numbers. Mm-hmm. I do want to mention there are really significant changes here than from what a lot of stakeholders have seen last time. So before this comes to the council, I don't necessarily have big concerns about all these, other than they're really big changes.
than what we've seen before, and I want to bring it back to that stakeholders group. In particular, and now this is something, working in collaboration with all these parties, they got me to agree that having bicycle infrastructure in this stretch was not correct, so we took it out. And that was to do some things like shorten the crossing lengths at some of the blocks. This undoes some of that. So at an absolute minimum, I want to go back and have those discussions with the stakeholders. They deserve to at least have a Q&A before it comes to the council officially. And then lastly, I don't want to separate this issue from another pending issue that we have, which is the official map, what we're going to do with. I would rather have that fight about what the setbacks are going to be as this area redevelops concurrent with this than leaving that into the future. I'd like to handle this all at once, and let's have that battle now, not when we have a pending development project in front of us. So I think those are kind of my three the three miscellaneous that I want to bring up.
Mr. Russell, what is the setbacks that we're looking at here?
There are no setbacks here. This does not. This road, this project can be built without any of the setback issues being addressed. We don't need any additional right of way, and the plan is consistent with the public ground plan. It's consistent as you see it with the public ground plan. The only difference is the lane widths. They were proposing 10-foot lane widths. We're looking at minimum of 11. It's the only difference, and that's evidenced in one of the slides that we had up there.
All right. Mr.
Yeah, so I guess it's not all jiving for me, so maybe Richard, you can explain it. Well, the conceptual future build looks like it takes considerable amount of property. So when you say that there's no need for a change of right-of-way.
The additional right-of-way that's shown on those exhibits, if you could go back to those, is for what's identified in the public ground as additional public space. But not anything to do with the roadway itself and the number of lanes or anything. It's additional width of the sidewalk and other public space.
So I'm going to read it back at you. We are not going to acquire that with a right-of-way. We're simply going to use that as a criteria for approval of a project for financing.
We are not doing either at this point.
Because that's not been approved by the council? Or
correct.
Okay, all right.
So in other words, we don't need an additional right-of-way
for this current near
project. The additional right-of-way requirement, whether it's in the form of an easement or a dedication or an acquisition, is something the council hasn't addressed or decided upon.
Mr. Wojcik?
The transit center that's shown here, that wasn't in the last update that went to the St. Mary's Dome.
In fact, that some of the images there are ones from that group.
I'm confused. I'm going to have to check my notes. Okay. I'll just say that much. But I know that there were some things in here that came as a surprise to a lot of folks. So.
They included some significant renderings for both the north side and the south side of those open plazas might look like and things like that.
Yeah, I remember that part. And then there, we do have 50, right now we have a requirement for a light at 15th Avenue as a result of the redevelopment that's happening.
Temporary signal, yes.
Temporary signal,
yeah.
Okay. And I concur with the point that this can be built without addressing the setback issues. My thing is, I want to get that question answered, because while you can do this project in there, there are serious shortcomings if we don't address what we're going to do with the additional right-of-way in the future. And even though we don't have to do it as part of this project, I want to take away any uncertainty about what the plan is for the city in the future, because it's a big part of redeveloping this area.
And maybe if I could pick up on Mr. Ruska's question, as I look at this drawing as an example, and especially the conceptual future build, if I look at that drawing literally, I see encroachment into buildings and right away. So that's what I'm trying to understand. If when we talk about whether this is possible or not.
On the north side.
Yes, yeah, so again, it's just that,
can take that out.
Wide pink line on the bottom drawing,
right,
is not part of the project.
We should have one without it.
To try to not confuse you with what this project is and what the public realm process is. Sorry,
we're just operating at a different level.
It was a nice try.
Mr. Campy.
So I want to go circle back, because I asked you if we were going to use like TIF qualification or other thing for this. But again, we could use any of a number of tools to accomplish this as the goal. But again, it will require ratifying this as the desired outcome for this strip.
This is the design for the street within the 66-foot right-of-way that exists, plus the additional encroachment that has occurred for years on Mayo that will be formalized with an easement on the Mayo property to come to St. Mary's.
So what's your immediate next step? Are you planning to take this back to a stakeholder group? Or
what we are hoping for you to approve, as we have been trying to in a lot of these meetings, that basically the location of the curbs, in other words, the official official geometric layout, if you will, that this is where we need to build the curbs, that we need two lanes in each direction, and then we maintain the parking on the north side and convert it to a bus a transit lane, if you will, between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. weekdays.
So we are not committing or being asked to decide on the conceptual future build on any of these? Just
correct.
What's being proposed for the near term build?
Yes.
That's what you want for a decision.
Right.
Well, it's up for discussion.
From our recommendation to you is that nothing changes in this plan, the road plan, between the two. And we're showing again with those red lines, if we're trying to show that curb doesn't change its location and what lies between the curbs. The only thing that changes then is what's behind the curb and how that space gets used.
Yeah, and that's fine. I was just trying to understand what's being requested. Other comments, Mr. Wojcik?
I would just say that if I can be convinced that this is in fact what I've seen before, my reservations would go away. But I'm just not there yet.
Well, the middle one, I misspoke, the middle one is what you've seen before in the public realm process. The difference primarily is the fact that there's not any room for a bus lane there. And the, I had it up here, I have glasses on it because I can see that. So we're looking at a 13-foot lane in which the outside lane, if you will, we need that for the buses. And we didn't have that here. We had basically a 11-foot lane on the outside instead of 13. And we had...
it's only a 7-foot parking lane in the public realm, and we have a 10-foot.
Right.
So there are 3 feet there and another foot there.
Oh,
and we're using that 10-foot to accommodate the extra width of the bus instead of just cars.
So did you get rid of the tree trench then?
The tree trench concept is not proposed as part of this because we don't have the right-of-way to do it. Because every square foot of space behind the sidewalk is... I'm sorry, behind the curb is sidewalk.
So I think, like a lot of things lately on these projects, there are many things that are sort of intermixing here. And I know Patrick is doing some work on the St. Mary's, public realm, and that's a conversation. I think that it was close, but there's additional stakeholder engagement that needs to be discussed on that. I don't know if Patrick wants to provide a brief update on that, but
Mr. Campion.
Sorry, I'm not against getting an update, but I would. Prefer to move along and say this isn't my ward, and I have not necessarily been engaged with the Second Street stakeholders in this area. So if there is a council member who has, that would be my point. Is if there's need to have staff present and to do that and to just talk with those stakeholders one more time to make sure we get their feedback, I'm supportive of that. When we bring stakeholder groups together, I hope that they're being adequately connected with. But beyond that, I don't see anything here that's super alarming. So I don't. I hope that's a simple meeting and doesn't raise any
suspicion. Yeah, it sounds like we've got some slack built into the schedule, but I realize there are some deadlines.
And I'd like to keep it moving, too. I get that. I mean, I want to keep it moving, too. So give me a... If I still have... I'll let the council know if I still have concerns after talking with Richard tomorrow or sometime.
Perfect.
All right. Enough for today on that topic. All right. Mr. Campion?
I just wanted to comment. I see a number of county planning department employees earlier, and I realized we had a kind of open conversation about the planning department, and I wanted to reiterate that I've been nothing but absolutely impressed and super ecstatic about the outcomes of the comp plan and everything we've worked on lately. So don't take any of our misgivings about the departmental structure to be anything more than our own kind of wanting to manage it as best as possible. So thank you for all of that.
I agree. All right. Anything else for this afternoon?
Sorry.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.